Baby, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Hand him on my whoa, whoa, Andy, whoa, whoa, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is Wilder Schmaltz. He's the Associate Director of Frohlich Gallery. Thanks for letting me come in the gallery when no one else is around and have a close-up look at these wonderful paintings.
We're looking at Tom Prochaska's work. Tom is sort of a mainstay of Portland and Northwest art. He was a longtime Pacific Northwest College of Art professor in the printmaking department. He has been showing his paintings and prints and papier-mâché sculptures around for the better part of 40 years. We'll look at the works in shuffle. The first painting here is pretty large. It's called Raccoon in the Mirror, and it's a large black and white painting that seems to be of an interior. We've got a seated figure sort of in the center lower part, and the raccoon and mirror of the title are a bit obscure. They're sort of off to the lower left. There's a sort of hunched raccoon gazing at its reflection in a mirror.
So Prochaska has a history as a printmaker. What's he doing when he puts oil to a canvas? What do you think his method is, and also how is that affected by working in black and white?
His main loyalty is to the composition of a piece. So he really, first and foremost, puts the paint down onto his surface and pushes it around until he finds a composition that he finds interesting. And really all of the things in here, the raccoon, the mirror, the figure, the table, are in service of the composition to him. So it really may be that this sort of curved shape of this round table is the right shape that he felt the painting needed, and he decided, well, you know, let's make it into a kind of concrete object, and we'll give it some legs, and it's a table now.
So in the raccoon painting, do you think he's thinking like an abstract painter? He's certainly not thinking like a narrative painter. He's not trying to tell us a story about a man and a raccoon.
You know, he very much is an abstract painter, I think, at his core, but I think looking at his work collectively, there is narrative to it, and often the narrative is the last thing to come along into a work.
So we're looking at one of the smaller pieces next to that one. It's called Shuffle, which is also the name of the whole show. So you think it's called Shuffle because the show deals with, you know, there are figures, there are semi-abstracts, there are landscapes, people, objects. It's kind of a mishmash, sort of a random feel. But this piece, this is two people. This looks like a woman standing up and a man seated. They look like trousers and dresses. And it's in color. So you said he found color a bit too easy. So tell us about the palette of this. There are some, it's a mainly kind of neutral palette with greens and browns and blacks, but there are splashes of blue in there and red. Tell us about what he's doing with color here, and then tell us about the two figures and sort of where they came from.
So when Tom does paint in color, he does not use easy color, as he said. So it's always what I might call an unlikely color palette. There is a kind of indistinct background area to this painting that just seems to be most constructed of little clouds of brush strokes. There's sort of these luminous kind of pink and blue, a little bit of a minty green. The figures in the front have darker greens and browns, some kind of dusty pinks and dark yellows. So it's very, very interesting. It's extremely muted. It seems to employ the same tonal push and pull that his black and white paintings do, but using these unusual colors.
But this is again, shuffle does not really refer to the man and the woman, what they might be doing. Do you think?
No. Shuffle. To me, seems to refer more to a pace, the pace that Tom works at, which is often fairly slow and waiting for that imagery to emerge or that pleasing composition. This particular painting, Shuffle One, he said took about 2 months to finally come together for him. He wanted to have something kind of entirely different as far as the imagery in this, a sort of magician's cabinet was going to be the central image, and he kind of worked on making that in the way that he wanted it to be for a couple of months, and then finally in the end obscured it, and the second figure emerged rather quickly, and he felt that it was a complete and wonderful painting at that point.
Just along from that, there's a kind of a three in a row. The two of them are definitely all grayscale. One of them has tiny touches of color. But the first one is called Tower in Austin, Nevada. And it looks like a sort of castle turret, maybe like a three or four story tower, like you'd see in Italy. And then there's a light background and there's a figure in the foreground. It's very... very ill-defined figure. So really, we're just looking at a tower. Where is Austin, Nevada, and what's special about that?
Well, from what I understand from Tom, this again was a painting that he was working on. It ended up having this sort of blocky central image, and late in the process, he recalled reading a recent newspaper article about this small town, Austin, Nevada, that had had the past century, a kind of grand European-style tower built by a railroad baron. Mm-hmm. And now it's all but a ghost town, but it has this very unusual large structure in it. So he altered the painting to make reference to that.
Have you talked to him about this kind of thing where he'll just pick something, it's like ripped from the headlines kind of subject? What does he attach meaning to it? Because we said there's not a narrative strain in this work. So, do you know what he's thinking when he's picking his subjects?
Well, I think that he is very much attracted to that sort of story of kind of a crumbled past grandeur. Maybe he's traveled pretty extensively in Europe, Switzerland, Italy, and elsewhere, and a lot of his buildings and town scenes do evoke that sort of flavor, and I think that story very much fit in with a lot of his previous work as well, just in terms of imagery.
There's another small painting. It's called The Arsonist. It's a house, a red house in a landscape. And the chimney is smoking, but also there's a lot of red coming out of the backside of this house. So, like, definitely this is the building that's on fire. And then on a kind of rock in the foreground, looking down on the house, given the scale of the human. There's a guy, looks like he's in a dressing gown, and he's got like either a beret on, or he's actually a panda, or he's like a furry dressed as a panda. But he's either looking at us or not, because the faces are normally so indistinct. I wouldn't trust two dots to really be eyes. But what do you think? Because we know that arsonists have this fascination, and they always show up to the fire and watch from a distance. So you think maybe he's the arsonist?
I think so. As you say, as much as Tom's figures ever do have readable features, this fellow seems to be smiling a bit. So I think he's pleased at his handiwork here. It's a very kind of cute rectangular house with a chimney that looks like it's fairly isolated in a field. And then there are these red flames and smoke coming out of the top of it. The color palette he's used in this is really quite interesting. There are some very pale greens and blues and yellows and pinks in the sky, contrasted with some kind of very dark greens, emerald greens, brick reds, and some muted blues. And they're just all on top of each other everywhere.
And lastly, in terms of subject matter, these two are very different. There's hammer, which is a sort of a claw hammer, or no, it's an engineering hammer, upside down, mainly just the head, very kind of misshapen and sort of out of proportion. And next to it is studio blinds, which is probably like, you know, the blinds in his studio. These are black horizontal brush strokes on a kind of cream background, with a bit of sort of brick-colored brown in two of them and in some of the background. Is he known for doing this kind of close-up work on objects?
Very much not. These two are a bit odd for him, as in his own words. The hammer piece, he said, was just sort of a form that emerged in applying paint to the panel, and he saw a hammer at some point and proceeded with it, even though it's not what you call a regular sort of hammer. His friend Morgan Walker, who's also a great painter, theorized that the hammer started out as the negative space, but he saw that form there. And there is the slightest suggestion of a landscape or a strip of land at the bottom of the piece, which I think really completes it and ties it to his other work. Definitely, the studio blinds piece is really quite abstract, and it's something that I would not have expected to see from him, and I don't think he would have set out to paint it, but that is in some respects the story with any of his paintings. They're very much unplanned, and these two paintings are kind of an extension of that, him practicing something new and stopping at an unusual time in the life of the painting.
I'm Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. I'm still here at the Froelich Gallery, and I'm with Charles Froelich, the owner, and we're looking at the other half of the show for May 2020. It is Yoshihiro Kitai, prints and paintings. And Charles, tell us a bit about these prints that were done at Crow's Shadow.
Hi, Joseph. Thank you for coming out today to look at Yoshi's work and bring some attention and thought to him. Yoshi was a resident at Crow's Shadow Institute in Pendleton last summer, so summer of 2019. And he'd been working in symbol and form with cloud shapes and waves and the sky for years. But when he got out to Pendleton he was trying to think of what the next project and series would be, and the clouds were just so stunning out there. And if you've not been to Pendleton, it is really remarkable to stand on the ridge of a plain and look over the wheat fields and see the blue mountains and the clouds rolling over. Thunderstorms are amazing. Sunsets, sunrises. It's a dramatic place to see to watch the clouds, to just cloud gaze. And Yoshi said it was just, he had no choice but to continue working with the clouds, and it was a great affirmation of his focus on that natural element, the moisture, the sun, the changing reflections in the clouds, and the blue sky above. So he was a resident at Crow's Shadow, and they have a terrific lithography program. They invite artists to come out and print that maybe don't always have printmaking experience, but they also do have artists that have printmaking experience. And Yoshi is one of the professors at PNCA that teaches printmaking. So Judy Bauman and Yoshi hit it off great, and he loved his time out there. And this is the real start of this series that he called Conflux. There is a silver ink and layers of varnish that give contour form, contour shape to these big flat cloud forms. So you look up close or maybe at an angle and the light catches it, and you see the detail of little squiggly marks in the clouds, and then you find, oh, that one looks like a poodle, or here's Santa Claus. And so they're fun to discover the little details. And I could go on.
So there are four of these. Each one has like a colored area at the top, maybe blue fading into yellow or magenta. And then there are these clusters of dots. So they're in a cloud formation themselves, but they're colored dots, I mean, placed by hand. The bulk of the clouds look like, you know, like cumulonimbus thick storm clouds, but they're in this opaque silver ink. And then you said the varnish brings out a kind of relief. There are, looked like brush marks, also in a cloud pattern. And then what is the background, which is just plain white?
Well, the paper is a plain white, a bright, bright white. And Yoshi jokes about, as a printmaker, one of the things that he has tried to steer away from is this thing called a rainbow roll. And if you're a printer, you'll know what that is. It's where you put a couple of colors of pigment or the ink on the roller, and you roll it and it bleeds together until it's a big, like, tie-dye effect. And he said, oh, he was so thinking he wouldn't ever do that. And then he got there and he just saw the transitions of color in the sky, and he went right for a rainbow roll. So mark his words, you know, he did it. So the print also has a shinkole, which is Chinese collage term. The term means Chinese collage, and it is a printed dot pattern, which is typical for Yoshi, or handmade dot pattern, but this is printed, and then they cut into individual cloud shapes. So those are all hand cut. So there is a hand element on each of these. These are all unique. And he did a large series of the monoprints at Crow's Shadow. This is just four.
And these are monoprints?
These are monoprints, yes.
So he would have rolled them off on a piece of
perspex? Yeah, the plate would have had some matrix that was repeated. Maybe they changed the direction of it, or maybe they inked it in a different sequence. So some things could be repeated, but he treated each one very differently.
The rest of the work, these are individual pieces, these are paintings, I guess. They use a lot of his trademark silver leaf and gold leaf. So Yoshi Katai popped up in the New York Times. There was a well-designed house featured in the style section, and they had some of his work on the walls. That kind of put him in a kind of upper bracket, really. You know, like, you gave him a bit of a name beyond Portland. I'm sure he already did have one. But what struck me was, you know, this sort of liberal use of gold and silver leaf. It just seemed like very generous. It dominated some of those works. And here it seems to be even more. And these are cloud formations again, I think. But they're all done in this silver. So tell us, how does he put the silver on?
Well, these are a series that followed the Crow Shadow and other series from PNCA, and they're all hand-worked. So everything is hand-drawn and hand-applied, and he is using silver and gold leaf. He uses silver in one and gold in one. He doesn't mix the two together. There is a gesso and element for, you know, sub-layered detail, and then the pigment is a gansai, and that's a Japanese traditional tempera type paint, and there are dots that it's like gouache, but it is a skin glue, like rabbit skin gesso, where there are actually, I think it can include fish skin and rabbit skin. So it's a glue binder. It's a protein binder for the gouache, and it's a very traditional Japanese media. And so the dots are coming in and out of view from the clouds. That's a real special part of Yoshi's work. They're not just decorative pattern to symbolize water or waves or clouds, but to him they're also all the people he knows and people he sees. Like, he thinks of all the people in the world, his family, or the people gathering together, or how they used to. So these dots are more than just water for him. And the colors are fairly minimal. It's red and green and blue. And so these are all handmade.
Are his works normally, these are framed, but the paper is sort of, you know, it's not stretched at all. It's sitting off the background in the frame. Normally, are his paintings framed and all this is sort of more tight and smooth?
The silver leaf and the gouache surfaces are fragile, and they could be marked easily if they were rubbed. I mean, fingerprints will show up if someone tried to clean it, you know, or mark it. It would scratch the surface and it would damage it. So the framing with a plexiglass is important. And he does work on panel. In fact, he's got a very large commission in progress right now for the Multnomah County Courthouse, which is under construction at the base of the Hawthorne Bridge. And he'll have a large series of panels that will kind of fill a wall. And those will be on panel, but they will also, they'll be on paper on panel, and they will be framed. There will be a large plexiglass box over it. So they'll be safe and protected for generations of people to look at.
Mm-hmm. So we're looking at this gold leaf one. What's it called? Conflux number 10. They're all called conflux, right?
Yes.
And gansai paint, gold leaf, gesso on paper. What is it about the gold that is so kind of indulgent and generous with it? Normally they kind of save it, you know, detail, but here it's two-thirds of this surface.
Well, Yoshi comes from Japan, and gold leaf can be considered like, I mean, yes, some people think, oh, it's garish, and there have been, I guess it's not like every Japanese person wants gold everywhere, but there's a tradition of large screens, of folding screens using gold leaf, and sometimes it's detail, sometimes it's the whole field, the background of the work. And the gold leaf as a decorative material was also it's centuries old. And imagine in a candlelight. That's an artist I worked with years ago that worked with Gold Leaf. She said, can we light the gallery by candle? Because it's so amazing and enchanting. And it's true. The indirect light or very dim light is really captivating on the gold and silver leaf. So it may be garish with a bright light like under this gallery light, but there's also the joy of the pattern and the luminous, warm glow of the gold. And imagining this in a home or an office or somewhere where it's not so brightly lit, I think that sounds marvelous.
Yeah, my colleague who also does Art Focus, Amanda Clem, sent me a video of someone. She was in here and someone was turning the lights on and off, and every piece went to a kind of negative. You know, the gold went darker and the background really popped, and then reverse. In this case, with the gold, these shapes are curved. You know, they're like bubbles. Normally, you don't get that kind of much control over the shape. How does he do these curves? Is he just cutting with a scalpel or something?
He cuts these by hand. He said it's all very difficult, but he's done it for years. It's funny to ask how do you do that? How do you do that? And it's like it took him his whole life to get the control with his hand. So cheers to control.
Are they stuck down?
Well, this gold leaf is, he paints in a sizing or an adhesive into the pattern, into the shape where he wants the gold or silver leaf. And then the leaf is put on top and burnished into place. And it only sticks where the adhesive has been painted.
And then he's painting on top with this Japanese paint, these dots.
Yes.
So not just on the white background, but on the actual gold, there are turquoise dots. Does that take the same way as the paper?
When you look up close, and we do have really high resolution images on our website too, so you can see all of the work from the series of Conflux by Yoshi on our website, and just click on the image and you can blow it up a little bit on your screen to see in detail. Sometimes the gouache, this Gansai, is really dense, and that's maybe the first application after he dips his brush into the pot of Gansai, and he puts it down, and it's a very dense pigment. And then it gets lighter and lighter as he goes around. So it is, it's not that the Gansai is not being rejected by the gold, it's just that he will dip his brush and then dot, 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 dot. And by the fifth or sixth dot, it's much less pigment.
So just tell us, do you know what he's working on now? Is this, this is all recent stuff. He's got his courthouse work. Does he have another field of, another style he does? Or
the courthouse is the current project that's consuming him now. So it's a massive series of panels, and they will be in this sequence, in this series, for what we know. That was the part of the proposal.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were Wilder Schmaltz and Charles Froelich. We're in the Froelich Gallery, and we've been looking at Tom Prochaska's work and Yoshihiro Kitai. And this work is probably going to be up through the end of May, since the gallery is only open by appointments because of social distancing. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus, Charles and Wilder.
Thanks, Joseph. We really appreciate your work.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
Andy Warhol loves a scream. Hang him on.